Swung on and drilled to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is a foul home run. Just over the pole. I think it went actually over the top of the pole. Wow. A Stantonian home run. Giancarlo. Now here's Chapman's 1-2. Hit on the ground at first. Grabbed by Walker. Flips to Chapman in time. Ball game over. Wild card game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
We get it. The Yankees win. The old ever famous foul home run. That was a funny call. Oh, Yankees win. No surprise here. I mean, everybody thought the Yankees were going to win, I think. I mean, the A's don't have any starting pitching, really. They have a great bullpen, and it went exactly kind of how I thought. I didn't think it would be that particularly close of a game, and it wasn't. And so now it is what I guarantee you, a whole bunch of TV executives were going, in Major League Baseball, please... Please win, Yankees. Please win, Yankees. We lost the Cubs. Now we got the Rockies. We got the Brewers. Yay. Please, Yankees win. And they did. Aaron Boone, the first year manager, former player, and was involved in the Red Sox-Yankees series back in the day, of course. There's been many over the years. And, of course, Alex Cora is the first year manager of the Red Sox. The Red Sox won 108 games. It doesn't mean anything now. Yankees won 100 games in the wild card yesterday, 7-2 over the A's, who end their great season with 97 wins and had to go on the road in a wild card game. It tells you how top-heavy the American League was and how bad the bottom half of the league was. The Orioles, the Royals, the White Sox, the Tigers, and more. And here's Aaron Boone on the upcoming Red Sox series, which will start on Friday in Boston.
I think they can't wait, and I think they're ready and relish the opportunity to go up against the game's best this year. And obviously we're very familiar with them. We know how good they are, you know. I mean, we know we have to play our best if we're going to have a chance to beat them. You know, obviously they're very tough at Fenway, but, you know, I think you say the same for them probably. But I know our guys can't wait to get there and try and get it done.
Well, and it's the best out of five. Usually when the Yankees Red Sox play, it's the best out of seven.
Yeah.
In this series, I kind of would like to see a best out of seven, to be honest with you. They should just change it, which they probably could. Yankees Red Sox, just change it.
Just change the rules willy-nilly right in the middle of everything. We want to see seven.
A shorter series favors a team that maybe isn't quite as good.
Yeah.
And based on the season, the Red Sox are 8 games better than the Yankees. So a short season, or a short series, you take game one, you have less time to recover to regain home field advantage if you're Red Sox. So game one is gigantic.
Oh, yeah.
And I would imagine Sale's going to start for the Red Sox, who has been a little banged up and not quite as good late in the year with some injuries, some health issues. So if the Yankees still game one, and I picked the Yankees to win the World Series, and I really, really don't want that to be right. But I think the Yankees are, I think they're the second best team in all of baseball and maybe the best. And I think the two best teams in baseball are playing in the division series.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, it's a bummer.
It is.
But it is what it is.
Yeah.
Can already hear the Red Sox fans, if they decided to do something like that, like extend the series. These guys are always doing something and changing the rules to help these bums. We always get the brunt end. That's what they, it would happen.
And then
before.
They lose a 5-game series. Well, this is a bad way we played a best of 7 series.
Absolutely.
You'll hear that as well.
Absolutely.
Of course, the Yankees will say the same thing.
Sure.
Yankees fans say the same thing. Why wasn't, they were such great franchises. Why wouldn't a 7-game series? Because that's the rules. That's how it works. But it is a bummer that really the two best teams of baseball are playing each other in division series. But, you know, you got to beat them at one point or another, more than likely, to be the best. You got to beat the best. So there you have it. More on the playoffs coming up in a moment. But local sports, we got some changes. Our broadcast schedule, we got Thursday Night Football on KD Country 94. There's Thursday Night Football on NFL Network and Fox, and there's Thursday Night Football on KD Country 94. No, Tom Brady will not be there tonight at Beloit. If he is, Patriots are going to lose in Indianapolis. I'm telling you that right now. Maybe.
Well.
Yeah, so we'll take it the local angle for us.
Yes, Thursday Night Football tonight on KD Country 94 and also on video stream at ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan Channel. Beloit taking on Scott City. This game moved up due to the long trip for Scott City with the threat of severe weather here tomorrow night. So they decided to move it to tonight. Pregame coverage begins at 6:30 and kickoff at 7 o'clock. Wade and Todd will be over there at Trojan Field here this evening. So that's coming up here on our station. There was one other game that was moved as well, and that was Hoisington at Minneapolis, and that's been moved to this evening also there in the NCAA. Everything else as of now is on schedule for tomorrow, and if anything else changes in that realm, we'll definitely make sure we get you notified. Always check out ncksports.com. We try to update those schedules as quick as we can when things are changed, and we try to notify people as well on social media. So, but right now, everything else is still scheduled for tomorrow night. Now, Thursday is typically a day for some cross-country and volleyball, so that's also going to be going on today, as weather permitting, obviously, for the cross-country. Lincoln Invitational this afternoon at 4 o'clock with Lakeside, Osborne, and Lincoln. And then the Smith Center team will be at the MCL meet at Phillipsburg at 4:30. And then also Boy Volleyball is in Rural Gypsum today. The Southeast Sling Quad, Southeast, Hoisington, and Heston are all competing there. Action will start at 4 o'clock this afternoon there in Saline County. So let's look at what's going on. Also, we have locker room chats tonight. We want to remind everybody about as well. Throws the day off a little bit, but locker room chats still going on as well tonight. So we have St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas coaches that we'll be speaking with this evening around 5:10 on Kitty Country 94, and then on kittycountry94.com on our podcast later as well. So it's a busy day now it turned into here for high school sports in our area.
I'm going to have a Friday night free. What the heck am I going to do?
I know,
do?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I might have to do the scoreboard show, which is fine. It depends on how your game goes. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. Scott City at Beloit, that's a long trip. I know I've talked about this earlier this morning. I know some people are kind of complaining, but just kind of it's like it's kind of inconvenient, you know, because now you got everybody split up, as you mentioned, volleyball, cross-country, and football for teams associated with Scott City and Beloit. And Hoisington and Minneapolis as well. So it is inconvenient, I get that. But at the same time, you know, if Beloit had to go all the way 3.5 hours to Scott City, or as we did to Goodland, and we knew there was a threat of some bad weather, we don't want to go all the way, not play. And then the school doesn't want to pay for a whole bunch of hotel rooms. They don't want to drive all the way back to Beloit, then go back the next day. That ain't going to fly.
Yeah.
The only problem now is you look at the weather, it's changed again. And now there's a chance for storms tonight. So I don't know what happens if... You know, I don't know what's going to happen. There's a junior high game. They've already bumped up to 4 at Beloit on Trojan Field on the grass. And if it rains today, if that'll tear up the field a little bit, I don't think it will. The field's in pretty good shape. But if you get some heavy rain, and then you have that factor an issue. And then I know the 7th graders are going to have a 5th quarter, and that was canceled so that they can, you know, have everything ready to go for the high school game. So there's a lot of things that have been moved around, some moving parts, but the reason they do this, if it was like an hour-long drive, they would just go ahead and stick
it. And I think that's why most of them haven't done anything yet in the other games in our area.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
But now with Beloit being in that district, going all the way to Colby or Goodland or Scott City and vice versa, it throws a little wrench into things. Now, last year about this time, as Chad pointed out earlier, Southeast Lane Beloit was going to play on a Friday. Tons of rain. Southeast wanted to play. We stuck around almost till 9:30, and then finally they called it. And then Southeast went home, didn't really want to. And then didn't really want to come back Saturday, but pretty much had to. Came back Saturday, glorious day, afternoon, perfect weather, everything went off fine. Scott City doesn't have that luxury. So that's why the game is tonight. If we get it in, we shall hope we get it in. Scott City, man, they're good. Scott City's ranked 3rd in the state in Class 3A. They shut out the first 4 opponents. They gave up their first touchdown last week to Russell. It was a 600th career win in their program history. Here's some little nuggets that'll blow you away. Scott City hasn't had a losing season since 1986. That's 32 years in a row they have been 500 or better. I mean, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they have won 4 state championships. So has Beloit. And Scott City has won 30 straight district games. And they'll put that streak on the line tonight. And you think about the tradition of these two programs, Beloit and Scott City. Beloit has 4 state titles. Scott City has 4 state titles. Beloit has 13 consecutive winning seasons. Scott City has 32. Scott City's winning 30 straight district games. Scott City, 9 last 10 years, had double digits in wins. Beloit, of course, had a tremendous run under Coach Koning, and now you have Coach Gober trying to get him back to the playoffs after a 2-year absence, but yet 6-3 the last 2 years. This is interesting. Now, Beloit's going to be shorthanded again. No Colin Chandler, no Zach Meyer, no Hudson Gray. That appears here tonight. But Beloit did that last week in 152-14. Scott City has an outstanding running back in Wyatt Hayes. He runs 10 yards every carry. He averages 10 yards a carry. So they can hit you with the pass as well a little bit. They can run the football. They have 59 kids on their roster. Beloit has just 34, and Beloit doesn't have 34 healthy kids, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big difference. Scutzy has more depth. And so you may be sitting here and listening to all this going, wow, Beloit has no chance. Well, you may think that. The Beloit kids better not think that, or it's going to be a long night.
Mm-hmm.
Scott City's got a long bus trip. Scott City's now coming up on a Thursday. It's a different situation for Scott City. They're used to long bus trips, but doing it on a Thursday might be a little bit different. One less day to prepare for each other. Don't know if that's good or bad for Beloit or Scott City. It'll be interesting. Here's Brad Gober, head coach of Beloit, talking about Scott City.
They're just 100% sound. Their kids do what their job is. They do a good job of reading what's going on, and, you know, they fly to the football. And so when you got some speed and you've got a disciplined defense, you know, it makes things difficult for an offense. And so they've done a great job. You know, obviously Coach Turner does a great job out there, and it's going to be a tough game for us.
Yeah, it will be, no question. But in order to, you know, be the best, you got to beat the best. We've said it over and over the last few weeks, and Scott City is one of the best. They're ranked third in 3A, and most years they'd probably be number one in 3A.
Yeah.
If not Andale going down, and I know you got Sabetha above them. I think Scott City might be better than Sabetha. We shall. I'll have more of an idea after tonight.
Sure.
Although Sabetha is a really, really good defending state champ. So this will be interesting. They met before, Beloit and Scott City. Back in 1975, Scott City came to Beloit and lost 16-0. First game of the season. Beloit won the state title that year. 2012. Scott City came to Beloit, sub-state finals, the semifinals, the state in 3A. Scott City won, 42-26. Scott City won the state title. 2013, Beloit goes to Scott City, beat Scott City 36-13, went to the state title, lost to Silver Lake. So what I'm saying is the winner of the Scott City-Beloit matchups all three times have went on to the state championship game or won it. And Scott City certainly could be that type of team mm-hmm. that could go on to the state title game and they could win it. So there is a rich history between these two schools. It'll be an interesting game tonight, and how the weather affects the game will also be interesting. I don't know if that'll affect Beloit more or Scott City. I'm guessing maybe Beloit a little bit because they like to throw it. Scott City likes to throw it, but if you're on a 10 yards of carry with your running back, you don't have to throw it.
Yeah. I mean,
of course, Tate Oliver ran for 264 last week. They didn't really have to throw it last week either.
You gotta stop the run if you're Beloit to even have to worry about whether that other stuff's going to be a factor in the game or not.
Because
if you can't stop the run, whether it's nice or rainy or whatever it is, it's going to be a long night for you.
Yeah.
So that's it. Because, like you said, Scott City's not a team that has to throw the ball if they don't want to.
No, they don't. And they don't have just one good back. They have other good backs as well. So it's going to be a challenge for Beloit, but I think they're looking forward to the opportunity. It is Scott City at Beloit tonight, special Thursday night football on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Then tomorrow night we'll have the Football Express at 5:40, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. Pregame at 6:30 and in Pike Valley at Lakeside on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com. Concluding our coverage with the State Farm Insurance Local High School Scoreboard Show tomorrow night, at 10:05. All right, so the playoffs, Major League Baseball, now we're really getting going. We've got the divisional playoffs. It's Colorado at Milwaukee at 4:07 today. You can watch that on FS1. Colorado, with Cincinnati as their pitcher, and Milwaukee just decided they're going to go with Woodruff. I don't know anything about either one of those pitchers, to be quite honest with you. I'm sure they're great. 4:07 today, Colorado at Milwaukee, best 3 out of 5. In the National League, Atlanta, and I can't pronounce his name, Foltynewicz, I don't know. He's a good pitcher for the Braves. I haven't followed the Braves very closely. And the Dodgers, Rio, I already pronounced that one as well. I'm on a roll. Braves at the Dodgers tonight, 7:37. That one on MLB Network. So if you don't get MLB Network, no Braves-Dodgers for you. Tomorrow, it'll be the Yankees and the Red Sox, game one. Yankees haven't named their starter. Many people think it'll be J.A. Happ, but we shall see. Or it could be Sabathia, I guess. Or it could be another choice. Chris Sale will get the start for the Red Sox. Yankees or Red Sox tomorrow night, 6:32 is that first game. And the Indians against the Astros. Astros defending World Series champions. Corey Kluber versus Justin Verlander. Oh, my. What a matchup that's going to be. Game one tomorrow afternoon at 1:05 on TBS. Both games tomorrow on TBS. So the Yankees winning last night 7-2 over the A's. Who did you pick to win the World Series? I threw it on yesterday.
Red Sox.
You had Red Sox. I said Yankees. You said Brewers.
I said Brewers.
I'd love to see the Brewers win.
I would, too.
That'd be awesome. Brewers, honestly, the winner of the Brewers-Rockies series is probably the team I'm going to cheer for all the way rest
of the
way.
That's where I'm at.
I'm cool with it.
I'm totally there.
Yeah. KU, we'll talk more with Brian Heaney, but probably not about this particular issue because I know already the answer, and that is he can't talk about this.
Yeah.
Although he's not on trial, Sylvia DeSosa could be ruled ineligible to play basketball for KU based on the outcome of a federal trial that's underway in New York. NCAA experts told the Journal World, the Lawrence Journal World, less certain is whether the University of Kansas may have to forfeit some of last year's wins and erase its Final Four appearance and conference championship from the record books. Former NCAA officials and an attorney on Wednesday told the Journal World that KU may have a defense against NCAA sanctions if it can prove that athletic department officials were unaware that money was paid to DeSosa to get him to attend KU. But they also said there are some ways, that KU could be punished, even if the facts show university leaders weren't directly aware of the alleged payment. Much depends on the outcome of the federal fraud case that began this week and is expected to last through this month or right before KU's regular season opener on November the 6th. Mm-hmm. At that trial, Casey Donnelly, an attorney for former Adidas executive Jim Gatto, on Tuesday, which was a couple days ago, admitted that her client paid $20,000 to get Sylvia DeSosa to attend the University of Kansas to play basketball. William H. Brooks, an Alabama lawyer who has represented universities facing NCAA fractions, told the Journal World on Wednesday the admission could make DeSosa ineligible to play for KU in the future, but may not result in sanctions for the university. He says, and I quote, as the information comes out, the first thing that comes to mind is that it could create immediate eligibility problems for the player, which is different than saying there has been an institutional violation. It depends in part in respect to these payments, not only the source of the funds, but who is directing the payment. The federal prosecutors consider schools like KU to be the victims because they were unaware of the payments to their players. Defense lawyers, though, place the blame largely on the school's lust for basketball glory, saying blue-chip athletes were used to attract tens of millions of dollars in donations and revenues. Also, a question is whether DeSosa himself knew of the alleged payment or if only DeSosa's legal guardian knew of the payment. From a rule standpoint, the distinction is likely moot. And the other thing that came out in this trial earlier this week is they talked about a $200,000 payment to Oregon to get the Bowen kid who ended up committing Louisville. And then Louisville got in all kinds of trouble, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned. But I've thought all along, DeSosa, after everything came out last year, how can he be eligible to play? And I have not understood how he's still not ineligible.
Yeah.
Like, there's kids that, like, take a sandwich and are ineligible. So I just haven't quite figured that part out. And then, of course, many people have a problem with this line, that KU was victims. And there are a lot of people that they can't believe that. Like, seriously, they're victims? It depends how you want to look at it. I'm not going to get into that argument because I can see both sides of it.
Sure.
Definitely. But I just don't see how DeSosa can even still technically be eligible right now, and I don't see how he's going to be eligible to play. The question is going to be, is he going to be suspended, say, for 10 games, 5 games, the first semester, the whole year? And if he's ineligible to play a whole year, then he's probably going to transfer. But then is he eligible to play at another university right away? Does he have to sit out a year? I don't know all that stuff.
I would think it's probably time for Silvio to maybe move on to the next level if that's true.
If
he misses.
If he's ineligible, I don't think he can be eligible somewhere else.
Probably. Yeah, and even if he is, I think he's probably like, I'm not going to lose a year. I'm just going to go try my hand at this next thing.
Which is unfortunate, especially if he didn't know about this payment and his legal guardian screwed up.
Right, and the other thing about this is the reason that DeSosa has been eligible when he has been and still is at this point is because the NCAA has investigated this last year and cleared him and said that he was eligible to play, and KU held him out until that investigation was completed. And he was declared eligible by the NCAA. And then he was allowed to play.
Yeah, but new details have come out since then, obviously.
Well, right. Are they reopening this investigation, though? Or is it like a double jeopardy deal where it's the same thing all over again? Or a mix of the two?
Well, but there's no double jeopardy that applies with sports.
Well, no, there's probably not. You know, there isn't. You know, it's the NCAA, you know, but it's just...
He wasn't legally declared not guilty, so...
Yeah.
Right, but he was... Not even a legal case.
But from a standpoint of the NCAA's perspective, he was cleared and deemed eligible to play, and now that it's changing.
I think it's changing when you have, you know, people actually on testifying under oath, $20,000 payment.
Right. I just haven't seen anything that we didn't know about a year ago.
I would guess that they didn't have enough to keep him ineligible all year. So they had enough to investigate, and they were happy with what they came up with, and then certainly new details can emerge with anything. I mean, there can be new details emerge with the Brett Kavanaugh situation that suddenly spins things the other way, and he doesn't get confirmed. I mean, there always can be new things that pop up, and and there's no doubt they're looking in. And let's be honest, if it's a federal case, you don't think the federal that the feds are looking in this case a little bit deeper than the NCAA? Anybody want to argue that point? I mean, but the NCAA isn't going to dig as deep. And don't have the people to dig deep like the feds do right now.
But it, I guess my question is the NCAA being scrutinized as much in this federal case as maybe some of these other institutions that are being put in the spotlight? That's my question, because we all know we have issues with how the NCAA conducts and handles certain things. I'm just curious what the level of scrutiny by this federal investigation is actually centered on the NCAA itself and not just member schools.
Well, I don't think it's centered on NCAA at all.
I mean, it's on the schools.
How's the NCAA supposed to babysit the schools? I mean, I don't know how that would be on the NCAA. Can you explain that to me, Dusty? How would this be on the NCAA? Every institution chooses to do whatever they want to do under the table. The NCAA, first of all, they don't have enough of an enforcement force to do anything anyway. We know that.
Yeah, that's well established.
And the NCAA is its own institution, so I just don't see how the feds can scrutinize the NCAA. I mean, well, they're going to, well, that's it. No more NCAA events because you didn't crack down on the University of Oregon and Kansas and Maryland and Louisville. Yeah. I mean, come on. They can't possibly do that. NCAA can't keep an eye on everybody. They try, but they don't. It's if other things are brought to the table, like Yahoo Sports, Bleacher Report, TMZ. They're the ones that break the story, not ESPN usually anymore. And then all of a sudden they look into it, right? And then they usually slap you on the wrist, it seems.
Well, and then in something serious, they don't even know how to go about policing it.
No.
They just don't. The feds are coming in and
give their
analysis.
All I'm suggesting is that maybe not part of the problem.
Oh, it's absolutely part of the problem.
There's no question.
It's part of the problem. My point is the feds aren't going after the NCAA. The feds are going after
their lack of
these rogue, if they're rogue, executives and agents and Adidas and shoe company representatives and shoe companies. And then eventually the collateral damage is the universities and also the players themselves that may or may not be aware of payments, which is the unfortunate thing if they didn't know.